So I'm talking to Padraig Nari, and I'm here outside, just outside Ballyconnell. And Padraig, I'm in your house, which is, I suppose, your workplace as well, because you've been working here and living for how long now, Padraig?
I came to Ballyconnell in January of 69. I left my job. I started the business here and I got married all in a month.
Okay, well, where did you come from originally?
I count myself a Sligo man, from Tubbercurry. But my mother told me I was made in London and I was born in Dublin. But I count myself a Sligo man, and I served my time. I went to school in Clonacool. I then went to the vocational secondary school in Tubbercurry, and then I spent 5 years serving my time to become a toolmaker.
What brought you down here?
When other people with stripes on asked me that, I said I wanted to be near my work. But I came to Belthorvet in 66 because they were looking for toolmakers in a little factory they had there, joined on to the shoe supply factory. And so I did 3 years there, and I thought I could do it on my own. So set up in 1969, I rented a building in Ballyconnell first and spent a couple of years there. The railway closed in 1959, so I was 10 years, he had come 10 years later.
Yeah.
And so the station then suited me because I had a dwelling house and I had the store where I could put my machines in, and there was plenty of space about it. And so I've been going since. We've reared 3 sons, 3 daughters, and now we've got 16 grandchildren. And they're all about me, which is wonderful. That's how I always wanted it. And so that's the story of why I'm here, or here, how I'm here.
And the name won't die out too soon.
No, it seems to be holding fairly good. Yes.
So talk to me then. You know, when the Troubles broke out in 1969, 1970, with the civil rights marches and Bloody Sunday. And just talk to me about that time.
Well, I suppose 69 was a busy year when I started here, because also the civil rights were ongoing. And
did you take part? Did you go up?
Did I go up?
Yes, were you marching?
I was, yes. I'd be honest, I couldn't understand why everybody wasn't marching. And I don't know, it may be in the breeding or in the genes. I mean, my mother comes from London, no Irish connections whatsoever. But even from being very young, if we bought a new kettle or a pan or a shovel and you lift it up, it said made in England, and I'd be given out, you see, and I'd say, look at that, made in England, and the mother would say, now you were made in England. But it didn't and like every mother, she was the best mother in Ireland in the world probably. But I couldn't understand why everybody wouldn't be as Irish as what I seem to be.
So what you're saying is you were very patriotic in that.
Yes, time. Yes.
And did you get involved then after that?
When I come to Belthorvet, there was a few of us from outside the area, and we spoke a bit of Irish, and I know that was frowned upon, and we also played a bit of hurling, and we were in the digs over, it's me in 1967, I think, we were in digs along with a Mrs. Farley, and we watched the the hurling final on the telly, and then we went out on the piece of ground in front of the factory, or in front of the where we had the lodgings.
Where was that?
In Belturbet.
Oh, Belturbet.
And we were, of course, trying to do what we saw on the telly, Kilkenny and Tip and whatever. And along come Garda Nolan O'Sullivan, he lived down the road a little bit further, and said that he saw this ball, the slither, going out on the road. And so the three of us got summons to court. We were really lawbreakers. Now, we got, because the slither went out on the road, and we were driving up and down on a green patch, like. But so the three of us had to take a half a day off from work to appear in court, and we got fined £1 each. And lost our half day work because the ball went out. So I thought to myself, it was going to be awful difficult to promote hurling in Cavan if one would finish up in court every time a ball went out on the road. And so anyway, that was that. And I had an interest in the language, and that, I think, came from me granny, who lived with us for a while. That was my father's mother. And I remember when I started going to school and brought a book home in Irish, and there'd be only probably a few words, but the granny said that she would give all she ever owned if she could speak Irish.
I see.
And I think them few words, that's the only words I remember me granny saying, but they always stayed in my head.
Why was Irish so important to you to speak?
Well, if it was that important to the grandmother that she would give all she ever owned to be able to speak Irish, the least I could do was do what she hadn't managed to do.
Okay.
But so I'm like, I have a good grasp of the language, like I use it, and up here I was involved in, with the county board, Irish Culture Office, sending children to the Gaeltachta. So all that, it's not just the border, it's our whole, the whole Gaelic idea. And so, of course, once the civil rights started, I couldn't understand why everybody wouldn't be marching, because, I mean, that time, like, it was unbelievable to me that people couldn't get a house or couldn't get a job or weren't getting educated because basically they were Catholics. And to me, there was no difference, Protestant, Catholic, because I'm a bit of everything. And so the least one could do was at least start marching. But I think after Bloody Sunday, there was no point in marching. And so then it became a bit more serious.
Oh, what did you do?
I wasn't like Jack Lynch and standing idly by, but we did whatever we could, but we don't shout about it, boast about it, because we know about the Boston tapes, and there's been people in trouble over it. But
I suppose they are things well known about.
Ah, yes,
the factory across the way, and
yes, like I suppose with what was very important was that this facility was here. And of course there was lots of things needed to be done, and sometimes one could have got a bit blind, you see, if things were being done while things were being done. But again, trying to keep border roads open and all that was major. This was the only road going into the north from south to north that was actually closed by the Brits, and we reopened it, and has never been closed. That's the only one from Dundalk to Derry. So we managed to keep that open, and whereas a lot of people will have forgotten, it would have been a sad town if that border was closed. So we managed to keep that open, and that was important. Lots of people, like, got killed. I knew Jim Murphy well, and Jim was involved in the civil rights, and I know his family yet.
Oh,
and
where was Jim from?
Jim from Derry Lynn. He had a little garage. And sorry, I'm as bad as
me. Oh, no, that's all the dust from your work. Yeah,
and Jim had a little garage down there below Derry Lynn, and Jim was killed, murdered in his garage one night. And, you know...
Who murdered him?
There was nobody ever charged, but, it would be people either with uniform or without uniform that wanted to keep the border there. And then another man also down in that area was Louis Leonard, and he had a butcher shop, and they killed Louis in his butcher shop and hung him up on the meat hooks. Rough, and we'd say.
But you gave what you got. You were as rough as they were. Is that what you're saying?
I suppose. Definitely to me, and nobody would ever say otherwise, there was nothing sectarian from my point of view at all.
What was it, so if it wasn't sectarian?
Somebody would kill somebody because they were Catholic or Protestant, that to me is sectarian. And
but what were you fighting against? If it
I was fighting against the continued occupation of our country by foreign forces. No matter how many years, I think it will be united, whether it's this week, this year, 10 years or 100 years. So it's a waste of energy and a waste of money trying to maintain something that... Yeah. In the last election, All-Ireland election that was held back in 1918... The majority of the people voted for independence, but the people who organised the election, the British, they didn't abide by the result of that election.
But so, do you see your neighbour, who is maybe a farmer and he's part time UDR man, do you see him then as a target to shoot, or do you find do you see him as the enemy? That's what I'm saying.
Well, I presume that once somebody puts on a uniform, then it doesn't make any difference whether it's England and Germany or France in Algeria or America in Afghanistan. It becomes two sides. I would have a great relationship with all my neighbours, and I don't ask them whether they go to church and chapel, and I have been in Methodist churches, Presbyterian churches, Church of Ireland churches. I've even been at a couple of Hare Krishna weddings. That end of it. It might be the uniform, but not otherwise.
Yeah. And so, there are many, many stories that, you know, you hear about north and south, but that border, I mean, in those days between the 1970s, 1980s, that the height of the troubles, did you find it, you know, that you were fighting a war, that it was a war that you were actually involved in?
It was a war. What else would it be?
But innocent victims were killed because of the violence.
Oh, I'm sure there were, but if you look at when, without any justification, America, along with Tony Blair, went out and flattened Baghdad. It was hundreds of thousands of totally innocent people there, indiscriminate, for what? For nothing. And why should they go to these countries and do these things? What we'd say has England, they haven't come to terms with the fact that they are no longer an empire. I mean, 100 years ago, they ruled the world, but they must come to terms with the fact that that they're not like. And I think I don't know what's going to become of the Brit exit thing, but I don't see that they can. The conversation mightn't become relevant within a short.
Paddy, you can see you're down here in Ballyconnell, and you have your business, and you have your traditions and your customs, and you know you play the games and
yes.
and all of that. But surely the Ulster people are entitled to their customs, the 12th of July march, and all of that. I mean that's part of their tradition.
Problem with them marching. They can march, but they cannot walk on their neighbours. Like there's no problem with them marching, but they can have their dances and their songs. The people would say in 69. The people in Belfast, they were literally being burned out. And why should they have been? Just because they weren't Orange people, they didn't give the Orange people the right to burn them out. And they were. It was Bombay Street was bombed, got fire. There was nothing left. And the people were streaming south. Camp set up on the southern side of the border too. That shouldn't happen. I mean, it's crazy.
But at the same time, you were making cases for bombs across the way. And this is Father Fintan always telling me that he stood up for you as a character witness in court.
Yes. If you take, at the moment, in Yemen, Saudi Arabia is wiping that country out, and hundreds of thousands of people are employed in England producing the weapons that they are selling to Saudi Arabia to wipe out the poor people that have nothing to do with England or Saudi Arabia.
I'm talking about just a couple of miles up the road now. I'm talking about here.
Yes.
Yeah.
But like, the people, who will interview all the hundreds of thousands of people who have done nothing else, only produce weapons in England, to send them weapons over here? Like, I mean, the biggest mass killing that was in this country, in this phase, was the Dublin Monaghan bombings. Who the dogs in the street know who did it, and there hasn't even been an inquiry. What about those more than 30 totally innocent people, along with hundreds that was injured and all the destruction? Like, Dublin didn't even have an inquiry. Like, does that make sense?
Well, you could say the same about the other side, because they are men shot and killed, and there was no inquiry. There was nobody held accountable ever for their.
There was just an inquiry to see who did it, but they know who did Dublin and Monaghan, and the destruction, and all those totally forgotten people. I mean, we have a government here who totally turned a blind eye to it. It was bully by tax. I mean, it may not be somebody from England who actually drove those cars, but they made the bombs, because the UVF didn't have the capabilities, and the UVF were made up of UDR, RUC, B specials. You can have peace in any country as long as the people lay down and just lie down and don't say anything. But as soon as one looked for, I mean, all the people in Derry were marching for that day with the right to vote.
But there was such a...
And
yes, of course. But I mean, it's so local here. It's outside your back door. It's here. This is where you had Inniskillen, and you had Newtown Butler, and you had just up the road.
There's young people in Derry, in Belthorpe. Yeah. Young girl and young Stanley. Yeah. I mean, they drove in. They went through it. Gar the checkpoint, left the bomb there. Two totally innocent young people had no one. You know, yeah. I mean, I knew the Riley family well.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, like, but then I don't.
Just up the road from then you had the Bullock family, and you had the other families that were targeted, I suppose.
Again, any of them that were killed, and I suppose it's sad in any war that people get killed, but any of them that were deliberately killed had a uniform on. Whereas the majority of Catholics that's killed mostly in Belfast, but all over the place, they were only just totally honest. The only reason they were killed was because they were... They went to chapel instead of church, but that's the only reason. So it was different.
Were you active right through the whole campaign?
I didn't get my P45, or I didn't get redundancy. I suppose it's like a piece of string. Is there a beginning or end to it? I remember Martin McGuinness says he quit in 74, and I suppose, sure, I could say that I never started, you know, but who'd believe what? Like, if Martin quit in 74, I don't know who... he must have got big redundancy to keep him going for all that years after. I don't, you know, I haven't been involved in Sinn Féin for a good lot of years now. Whether that may not be full answer to that question, but if one wanted to, you know, want to say it, I might have done some years in jail, but I was never charged with being a member. Like, so, I mean, Gerry Adams was never a member, or Martin McGuinness, you know.
So, but fine, you're not going to tell me, and that's okay. But I mean, it. Why did you do a number of years in jail? Was it because of the?
They said I was producing the wrong products.
I see.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, so, but I mean, that's an yes. extraordinary thing. How do you feel when, I don't know what goes through your head, but when you produce something like this, and you know it's going to explode, and it's going to cause damage, and probably kill somebody, does that go through your head, or is it?
Well, as I say about, not only here, but in England, hundreds and hundreds of thousands, the mass-produced weapons. Poor old Princess Diane was going around the world trying to campaign about landmines while they were still producing thousands of them in England. So it's all a bit contradictory. Like, the world could be a lovely place if people just stayed in their own countries and, you know, looked after their own people.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's never brought up, but, like, it's between 2 and 3 million people were genocided out of this country in the 1840s. Like, any talk of a famine is a silly talk. There wasn't any famine. You have a famine when there's a shortage of food. There were shiploads going out. Lord Trevelyan said in the House of Lords or Commons over there that this was the proper way of culling an overgrowing population.
Yeah.
That was genocide, but people wouldn't say that because it's not a nice thing to say, to accuse your neighbours. Like, and there is probably no nicer people than the ordinary English people, but it's those lords and those up there in high office that think that they probably think that they have the authority from wherever it came from to do this to people.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, I just can't tie those ends together, because it doesn't make any difference to me if somebody has a problem, be it here within 100 yards or within 100 miles. I don't ask what religion or anything they are. I would be there to help them. I am. And but like somebody, I mean, all the guns and weapons, I mean, there's Trump talking now about what he's going to do to the guy up in North Korea.
Yeah.
You know,
but to come back to Northern Ireland, right?
I wouldn't use that word. It's the occupied territories.
Yeah. Do you see though that over the years that you know, so many people have been hurt and so many people have been affected by the Troubles, and people living in fear, because people did live in fear. Do you think all that's leveling off, or do you think? Are you glad to see the other side of it now? Are you still angry at these people? Do you still want to keep fighting? I mean, or do you feel it's all over now?
When I came home from my holidays in jail, just a few years.
Yeah.
Just a couple of years. But I was interviewed. They did the press interviewed me, and they were surprised. They says, "Are you not angry?" And I says, "No." And they says, "Or better?" I says, "No." I says, "I was referred to as the happiest man in jail." There's anger or something like that. That only gets in the way. I haven't ever been angry in my life. I'm a happy, lucky character. But
have you changed your frame of mind? Do you still feel the same way as you felt back in 1969?
I'm
right through the Troubles.
I don't think the old dementia has set in yet.
You still feel that way?
I'm still Irish, yes.
I suppose when you had that situation where Father Fian, like I said, stood up, and he is a lovely man, and you know, was well respected. But he did you find that helped you a bit, you know, in your situation? I mean, having the support, say, of the local clergy, and having did that reduce your sentence a bit? I mean, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, it probably did, but I mean, for what it's worth, I had more than one letter of comfort from totally the other side. And the people who ran the place for me when I was away were either English or
ran your business here?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So, no, everything carried on the same. That didn't get in the way. I did. They could have stopped getting business done with me, but nobody did.
I see. And they kept coming here.
Yes. And just this morning, that machine that's being put together.
Yeah.
That's going north. And it's not. And. Yes.
Yeah, but so your customers can come from the north and the south now.
Oh yeah, but they've always come from north and south. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. You know, I suppose I'm trying to build a picture up around, you know, what happened and what was going on and how bitter people were against each other and will that happen?
We didn't find it here. No, I don't think we found it here. My first apprentice was not Catholic. My second apprentice was not Catholic. and several more were not, and they came, yeah. I trained them, they are all my friends and neighbours yet.
I see.
So, you know, I mean, if yeah. I was, no.
Would you think you were a good shot?
My involvement would be more administration.
And okay, if it was then, so was there a lot of support in this area?
Yes.
Was there?
Yeah.
And did you have support coming up from the south as well?
Yes.
Yeah, and so you got to know a lot of Kerry and Cork and Clare and Limerick and...
Yes.
They all came up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so would you say that organisation was well managed, well if you were in the administration side?
Well, it was, and whereas in that things might go wrong or be done wrong, basically, yes, you would have had pretty honourable people making sure that, you know, things were, you know, that there was no... robbery or, you know, things done for any other reason. You know, there was no intimidation of people or anything like that. It would have been, you know, there's probably a lot of things could happen but wouldn't happen. You know, that it was kept right and straight, you know. And, I don't know where's that. What I'm coming at, but yeah. I don't know that.
Yeah, but I, you know, if say for like, example, some informer infiltrated the organisation.
As it probably the longer anything goes on, I suppose the greater chance of that, and I suppose there were people. I wouldn't think things out in the general country would be less likely to happen than more or less in Belfast or in the cities. But no, I don't think there was very much informers or that like around, you know.
So today now, I mean, would you shake hands with your loyalist friends? I mean, if they came in, would you...
Oh, no problem with shaking hands with anybody. No problem.
But would you like the two communities to come together?
Be coming together. They should be all going to school together. They should be all working together. Yeah, of course.
And you would agree with that?
I go to the what might be called Protestant dances, but I go there, and if they come round and sell tickets, I buy their tickets for fixing their churches or whatever. I have actually carried out work on quite a number of churches where, even right going through what you're calling the troubles, I was up on top of towers fixing their bells and installing different parts in the churches. So I mean, if I can do it, then I was the guy, and I work with them and they work with me. So, no problem.
It was an amazing time, was it? Would you say it was an amazing time?
I suppose it was, yes. Yes.
Do you think we'd ever go back to it again?
Hopefully not. It's. I would hope that between EEC and, you know, that there will be enough. Like, I would say that more than likely a lot of what were the hardliners, like, I often wondered what would happen had there not been a Paisley, you know. And I know the man changed and etc. He saw God on the road one day or whatever it was. But if you go way back to 19, before 69, when O'Neill and Lamass met, I think had they not got rid of O'Neill that time, and of course it was Paisley that campaigned and they formed the UVF and they had the big strike and they brought down O'Neill and every guy that came after him, Paisley brought him down. But I do think that had there not been Paisley that time, that O'Neill and Lamass getting together, could have prevented, and it could have been further on than it is today, or as far on as it is today, within a few years.
Now, Liam Cosgrave, he died last night. He was Liam. Liam Cosgrave was the Taoiseach during mm-hmm. gun running and that, and he made a statement. He said, "The citizens of Ireland first." And it was a time when there was great tension in the area, and you know that the IRA could have gone south as well as north, and it was dangerous times. So, would you have taught him as a good Taoiseach, or would you have taught him as somebody that was going against your grain, you know, going against what you believe in?
I wouldn't have a lot of comments about him one way or the other, only he did say that his father was right for being one of those who ordered the execution of four innocent men because a guy, TD, was killed. But for to execute four innocent men, it doesn't sound very much like justice to me. So he maintained that his father was right to do it. I think you're coming from a very low... whatever he might have done in later life to do anything else, but and it wasn't him, but it was his father. But for any man to take upon himself to execute innocent people, I think it's gone a bit far.
Yeah.
You know, that'd be, so I don't have any further comment on it about him.
No, I was just mm-hmm. I was just interested in your comment. But if I was to invite you to come down to Ballyjames Duff next Thursday night at 7 o'clock to meet other people that I have spoken to, both north and south, would you come?
Well, I wouldn't have any problems going, but from one night to another, I couldn't guarantee you that I'd be. On Saturday, we're going up to Ballymacue. That's in the general Ballyduff area. We're going up to play a hurling tournament for a young lad that was killed in a car crash earlier this year after he was training with the Cavan senior hurlers the night before.
Yeah.
And he crashed the car the next morning and got killed. So we're having a tournament for Paddy Bannon on this coming Saturday, and on Monday we have the young lads up on the pitch. I'm involved in the hurling all
Are
my
you?
Life
still there?
Oh, I'm there, and next Monday night we'll have all the young ones up in the field training, and once the weather gets a little less favourable, yeah, we'll go back into the community centre, and I'll have children from 4 upwards training hurling all winter.
Well,
at least one night a week.
I find that fascinating. Listen, Padder, thank you for your time. I appreciate it. Thank you.
So that's where we are.